Good morning, everybody. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker, and this is our December and final edition. No drama there, right? Artful Asking Success Club call. Every call is recorded, as you know, and available on a private page on my website just for you to listen to whenever you want. I make it an audio so that you can walk or drive or whatever. And coming up next year, I'll be launching a podcast with the hope that it'll jump on your phone and be even more accessible and be shorter little sound bites of what this has been. So I don't have all the details yet, but it'll be fun. I want to thank you, especially in this busy year-end time, for taking the time to be with me this morning. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just doing my happy dance here in my little office where we have no snow in Wisconsin. And also investing in yourself, in your own personal and professional growth. And I work so hard to make these calls as meaningful as I can make them. I certainly always appreciate your feedback, any suggestions you have, whether it was fabulous, whether it was like, Marcy, not so much this time. You just let me know. I really appreciate hearing from you. And I just sent out an e-zine, and I want to also say people hit reply and talk to me from that e-zine, and I answer each and every one of those messages. So never hesitate, hit and reply to that and let me know what's going on. I will be taking this series and creating it into a program that will be available as something you can download and use, and it'll have additional worksheets and discussion topics as an online self-guided program. So that's coming up sometime early next year. If you ever have trouble with any of this stuff, just send a note to info@marcyheim.com and someone from my team will help you. Someone will help you. Might be me right now because I'm doing a little transition. A few announcements. There is still time, and I hope you will look at if you've got some extra dollars in your budget. I am doing my More Major Gifts workshop outside of Chicago. I always do it outside of Chicago O'Hare, so it's easy to fly into. On January 10th and 11th. That's two solid days with me. The group is generally about 15. I think we have 10 signed up at this moment. So it's a small group, really intensive learning experience outside of Chicago. I have it at, I think it's a Residence Inn. So the rooms are reasonable and it's free breakfast and free internet and all that free parking, all that kind of thing. Nice rooms, it's full kitchen, you've got a lot of space to wander around. Two solid days, 9 to 5. The price is $5.97, but I have a really special situation going on right now where it's so important. I've learned this from the participants that when they bring more people on their team, so when they bring their ED or CEO or one of their colleagues from the development staff, and a board member or their board chair or their development committee chair, when there are three of them together and they come in as a group and they learn together, it just launches incredible things. So I'm having three for the price of two. And I'm doing that to encourage you to bring a team because you can say to the other folks, hey, if you come, it's going to save us money. So if you've got some money left in that 2017 budget, in these two solid days, we go all the way around my cycle for successful relationships, and we write and speak and ask. We create a relationship action plan, at least the structure of it. We don't always get them all finished there. And of course, we spend a lot of time talking about what goes on in our heads, the most important piece. So it's an awesome, awesome 2 days, and consider it, please. I have, since being to New Jersey, a new Dial Down the Drama keynote. If you or someone you work with is in charge of booking in your speakers for your conferences or your monthly meetings or whatever, please consider that. It just really was a lot of fun to do. And I can do it in a quick 45 minutes. And I wanted to share just a few of the comments that I got back after the Dial Down the Drama happened in New Jersey. One said, "You are just what I needed to hear personally and professionally." Jane He, who is with Family Promise. Marcy is a rock star. Thank you. I love how she connects so many aspects of fundraising together. Plus, she gives so many tips of advice on self-care and ways to advance your career. That came from Samantha. I love Marcy's energy while she's sharing very practical, aha, thought-provoking ideas and concepts that are doable and can and should be implemented in our fundraising and daily lives. That came from Helen LaFoy, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, a VP of Development with the New Jersey Battered Women's Service. Marcy uses real-life experiences that run the gamut, ensuring her presentation is relatable, real, and impactful. I can implement what she shared, and am excited to do so. That came from Natalie, who is the Development Director at ICEE Foundation. So, best advice on establishing personal relationships and keeping them humming. That came from John Carney, who's a CEO. And I just want to share again that this might be something that would serve you and your colleagues if you have an event or something coming up. Again, it was the very first time I did it. We called it Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success, and it was very, very fun. In 2018, as I said, I'll be starting this new podcast, so stay tuned for that. But today, on to today. Today is part of this year-long series that I put together called Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success in Raising Money and in Life. Drama down, dollars up. Drama down, joy up. It's just such a great thing to flip that switch and come over to a side where living life is just so much more fun. I truly believe, my friends, that we spend precious, precious time. You know, God or the universe or wherever you come from around those things decided that 24 hours was right. So to sit there and say, oh, why isn't it 48? Or why, if I could just have 4 extra hours a day. Nope. Our job is to be really particular with how we choose to spend our 24 hours and to waste these precious moments lamenting about what might happen if that major gift doesn't come in these last 7 days. But, you know, I'm going to share a personal story about year end that you'll all just crack up about. But my David, my second son, was due December 25th, Christmas Day. My second son was due on Christmas Day. And I thought, well, at least I get most of year-end in, right? I mean, where are our priorities? Well, the little twerp came on Thanksgiving Day. What? What? Oh, my goodness gracious. What am I going to do with this turkey when I was looking for Santa? And I am, and this is happening. It's December. I just was really, what am I going to do? What I did was I sat back and I truly, you have to be uber prioritized. I said, who are those most major donors that I and only I must talk to in this year end? And of course, I left my baby with my husband and went out and saw these major donors. And some of them I had to say, you know what, this isn't going to happen this year, or someone else is going to have to do it. So I can't just say, what if that baby comes early? I have to say, how will I manage the situations that come along? And I'll deal with them as they come along. You can't get yourself all worked up on what ifs. You know, what if we don't get the raise? What if we get fired? You know, how many times did we put off dealing with something only to finally say, oh, my goodness, that wasn't so bad? So my son RJ is in finals weeks right now. So every day in the Heim house is this, oh, my goodness, this final. Oh, gee, that wasn't so bad. Yeah, okay. Why did I make such a big deal out of it? And really think about the time when you might have given up a whole day to being crabby over an email you got at 8:15. I just so badly want for you, all of you on this call with me this morning, to say, I am not going to do that. I'm stopping today, and from this point forward, I decide how I react. I decide when this email comes along that throws me off if I'm going to let it throw me off for the whole day. I want you to see that dial, and I know we don't have a lot of dials in our world anymore. Now we have faders. You know, they kind of slide up and down. We have sliders. We have push-button things on our cell phones. Whatever you need to see. But see yourself. See your inner game controlling that outer game. See your fingers reaching out and turning that dial up and turning that dial down. Please don't roll your eyes at me and say, oh, yeah, yeah, Marcy, right. I've heard all this before. Please say, yes, I can. I got this from Tony Robbins. It's called an anchor. When you see yourself doing a physical thing, so I physically see my fingers reaching that dial, turning it up, turning it down. And when something happens to me and I say, oh, whoop, look at that dial is up. I haven't turned it up. What just happened to me turned it up. So I can grab that dial and I can choose to turn it back down. If you leave one thing from this whole 12-month series, you control the dial. You control the dial. No one else has the right or the prerogative to crank on your dial. It is your responsibility, your prerogative, your power to control that dial. And most of that comes from our thinking. Our thinking leads to our feelings. Our feeling leads to our beliefs around what is happening. Our beliefs lead to our action. So this year-end time of year, oh, I called, they didn't call me back. So what is that belief? What our feeling is, gee, they didn't call me back. I'm going to feel bad about this. I'm sure they don't want to talk to me. They know I want to talk to them about money. Oh, it's going to be impossible to have to call them back. That was a whole inner game thing. That was a whole inner game thing. When, in fact, you could have gone a different route and said, wow, it is the end of the year. I wonder if they're as busy as I am. What a concept. I may have to call them a few times to connect them and give them the opportunity to have a conversation with me so I can see if there's something they want to accomplish yet this year that I can help them with. Well, got to make myself a note to call them again. So your thinking led to your feelings, led to your belief about that situation. And finally, it leads to the actions you take. All of that stuff happens before we ever get to the actions. Oh, my goodness. So today, I want to wrap up by talking about the words we use and how they can help us dial down the drama. But more importantly, I want to talk to you today about your legacy and the kind of world you want, the kind of legacy you want to leave in this world. You see, I want to create positive drama in people's lives. I've been thinking about this a lot. Drama's going to be there, but I want us to change the negative drama and really be a part of creating positive drama. So I first need to define drama. What is it exactly? Well, I define drama as overreacting to anything. Now, I understand that can be positive or negative. I am so glad to see you. Maybe that's a little bit too much for some people around you. Maybe that's a bit too dramatic. But often, drama is defined as overreacting to anything, often with a negative tone. And that negative tone impacts the physical, mental, emotional, and or spiritual state of you and the others around you. So your drama pours over onto those people around you, right? So it's overreacting, and it's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Wow, it's so powerful. So why is awareness and reaction to drama important? Why is this so important? Well, we've hinted at a few of those things already. Because it sucks our energy. It drains our energy. And one of our calls in this series, I talked about it's not so much about managing our time, it's managing our energy. It's really managing our energy. What kinds of things just leave you feeling, If you think about a balloon, all the air just went out of it, and you've got that limp rubber look. And aren't in fact there people, situations, email, colleagues, friends, family, holiday gatherings that leave us feeling like that balloon? It drains our energy. It's why drama is important. It wastes our time in non-productive thoughts and action. Oh, did you see Melly today? She's that time could be applied to something else, right? The time we spend reprimanding the idiot driver on the road who cuts in front of us and then putzes, you know, that emotional and thought time can be spent on something far more positive than saying, I don't believe you are the idiot driver you are being this morning. How do you manage even to get from point A to point B the way you drive? You know, we don't have time for that. Use that time better. It depletes us and those around us. So when we are depleted, when we feel like that empty balloon, that level, that energy change, it's sort of like, of course, I love my Packers and my Badgers. We feel the momentum shifts in those football games. Isn't it amazing how 1 4-second, 5-second play can impact the energy of 70 to 80,000 people sitting in the stand? Whoa, the power of drama. It damages our health. It's no secret that when we don't manage this drama, that it leads to just all kinds of mental and physical health problems. It attracts and gathers the wrong kind of attention. We're going to talk about that much more in a bit. But it attracts or gathers what I believe is the wrong kind of attention. It damages our joy. It damages our joy. And joy is one of those things that just can lift us up, but is so fragile, so fragile. Drama is probably the number one thing that increases job turnover and burnout. We just don't want to be in an environment that has this level of drama. It gets to a point where no matter how passionate we are about the cause, we say, enough, enough, I'm out of here. In fact, I just got a note this morning from someone who's changing jobs, and he described to me a dramatic office that he said, I just could no longer have that level of drama in my life. It was pouring over into my family life. It was pouring over into my health. It challenges and damages both our personal and professional relationships. And we almost get into this horrible cycle of drama at work, drama at home, drama at home, drama at work. And it feeds on itself. It spills over onto those around us with negative results. So not only do we influence others and how they feel, but then those feelings turn into their beliefs, and those beliefs turn into their actions. Ush. And often it leads to inappropriate and regretted action. There was a time that I was really, really unhappy with somebody who was booking me for a conference and how I was being treated. And I typed this, it was nasty. I'm not proud of this. I typed this really nasty email. And I said, well, I'm going to put it in drafts and then I'm going to delete it. Well, I was so mad that I hit my button so fast, I sent it right to her. Right to her. Yeah. It also can be used to get others to take desired actions. And I think we have to be aware of that power that we have over others with our drama. And we might get them to take a desired action. But is that a healthy action for them and for our office and for our environment and for our world? It's amazing the power we have. We can use our drama to assert power over other people. Think about that. So I shared that at AFP New Jersey, I had my first opportunity to really get on my soapbox about drama, and more accurately, how you can create your own game plan. This is where it gets fun, to dial down your drama. There was a woman there, Samantha Poremba, I may not be saying her last name right, Poremba, I think is how it is. She was such an inspiration to me. A young gal, and she said she had this huge family, several brothers and sisters, and in her large family, she says, and I quote, the message was, be a thumb, not a finger. I said, what? Be a thumb, not a finger. So be a thumb. Lift your thumb up and point it at your chest. Ah, pointing at yourself to take responsibility. Not a finger, so pointing outwardly at somebody else. I love that. So let's be a thumb, not a finger. I added that to my list of actions we can take. It underscores the dramatic shift we can make in our fundraising and life when we acknowledge that much of life truly is uncertain, frustrating, and scary. The folks in the Atlanta airport yesterday, how many of them got up in the morning having any clue, how many of them got up and had any clue that there was going to be a power outage in the Atlanta airport that would send air travel on its head, and literally, and you know, that kind of thing has that ripple effect because those planes don't get off and it messes it all up in Chicago and New York and LA. So life is uncertain, and certainly that whole scene was frustrating, and certainly that whole scene is a bit scary. Am I going to get home for Christmas? Am I going to get to my family? What a time of year for that. But even in the most dramatic of times, I mean, I know we all know where we were when the Twin Towers were hit. It's always our choice how we react to and manage these feelings. And that's where drama comes into the picture. Dial down that drama. We're emotionally drawn into the drama of others through their email, comments, criticism, angry posts, or constant complaining. This time of year, we have even more drama. Pile on year-end totals, year-end giving, gifts that don't work, out like we thought they would, holiday parties, people who drink too much at them, holiday gift-giving challenges, so much more. I mean, let's just jump already. So let's go a little deeper with all of this. What causes our drama? What's really the root cause of our drama? If drama is such a drain, why are we so willing to jump right into the drama mobile? No, 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 drama mobile. It's at its core, my friends, a need for attention. It's a need for attention. I want to talk about this a little bit more because this was a big aha for me. You see, as babies, we have really pretty limited ways to make our needs known. When we're hungry, when we're wet, we cry, we fuss. If we don't get the attention we want right away, we up the crying, we up the fussing. Now, I'm not criticizing us. We're babies. That's sort of what we have. And we get attention to our needs. But here's where it gets messed up. We start equating that attention as being love. Attention is not love. Attention is not love. Let me say that one more time. Attention is not love. I want you to think about the fact that not only is attention not love, love is a much deeper emotion that's based on a excitement and respect and partnership we have for another person. Not that they put the dishes in the dishwasher. Not that they attend to our needs. Not that they open the door for us. All of these are nice things. But attention is not love. Attention is not respect. We can pay attention to our boss and not respect them. True or true? We can pay attention to something happening out on the streets, a protest, but that doesn't mean we respect what they're doing. We can pay attention to an email that says, you won't do this and you won't do it now, but not respect the sender or the task. We can get attention but not feel appreciated. So we can pay attention to our loved ones, but it's going through motions and not really coming from that place of sincere appreciation. We can pay attention to our donors without really appreciating what they've done. We can say, okay, well, dropped off the chocolate chip cookies here, here, and here. But attention comes from a much deeper place. Appreciation comes from a much deeper place. So that person at the office that works 60 hours a month, 60 hours a week, you can tell it's year end and I'm operating on not as much sleep as always. That person that comes into the office 60 hours a week and is kind of craving that, oh, poor me, attention. Well, we might give them the attention. We might say, oh, wow, you put in so much time. But do we really respect them? Do we really appreciate them? Do we love them more because they put in all that time? Or do we kind of say, hey, you know, maybe you need to prioritize things differently and respect yourself a little more? Think about the person that comes in and complains, and what do they get out of that? Yeah, sympathy. Attention. Back to that attention. So the point about this, what causes that drama and why do we jump in for attention? But hear me and hear me well. Attention does not equal respect. Attention does not equal appreciation. Attention does not equal love. Think about it. Kids act out. Adults miss deadlines. Couples get pouty with each other, and we become victims to a world that does things to us. Poor me. Look at what happened to me. Our boss, spouse, colleagues, kids, you name it, all are doing things to us, the poor victim. Can anyone relate to that high-maintenance donor? You know, I've got some stories around that. That donor that, oh, my dear Lord, took a lot of attention, a lot of attention. A lot of drama. Those donors who are constantly wanting us to see them, do something for them, respond to their complaint or concern, it's always something, attention. And we resent that a bit, don't we? We see them as just seeking attention. It doesn't foster our genuine caring for them. Often quite the opposite. So, again, picture that dial, and we can control that dial. We can dial it up, we can dial it down, or it can dial up and we can dial it back down. So I want you to think about creating a new drama default. A new drama default. And I've talked about some of these things throughout the year, and I want to really bring home today that I think one of your best goals for 2018 could be to say, I choose one or two of these default mechanisms. And whenever I'm feeling that drama, I am just going to bump, go to this default, bump, go to this default, bump, go to this default. And why it's so important to focus on this and think about this is because the drama will happen, and before you know it, we are reacting. We are reacting like we have always reacted. And when we have trained ourselves to have a different default, it's something that proactively we manage so that we don't react with the same old drama reaction. It's proactively to a new default we have practiced. So the first thing we need to do in creating a new drama default is get clear on what triggers us. Sometimes it's the darndest little things. You know, sometimes it's the dirty socks on the middle of the floor. generally that's at home, not at the office, but, you know, you never know. Or it's the fact that your assistant puts papers in a certain spot on your desk or answers the phone a certain way. It might be a little thing. It's not always a big thing. And in fact, more often or not, would you agree that sometimes it's the little stuff that kind of gets that whole thing going? What makes you want to scream? What triggers you? Really get clear. That's a self-awareness. I have gotten to the point where I can hear my voice shifting. And sometimes it's like, Marcy, really? This is getting you worked up? Really? Huh. Be aware of it. No judgment. Be aware of it, though. We need to understand what triggers us, and it's different for all of us. And then pick a new default. Find an alternative action. Note I'm saying the word action. And I'm going to tell you a story here. It's kind of scary for me, but my son David is at Berklee College of Music in Boston. He sent his father and I a text, and it went something like this. I don't remember the exact words, but it was something like, I just want you to know I'm safe. Oh, that's a great way to start. I was on the street when 10 shots were fired. Because of my training, I went to gold, action gold or whatever it was. See, David has a black belt in karate. He's also been at, we're a hunting family. We all handle guns. He'd been to a camp in Phoenix or a place in program in Phoenix that was a defensive handgun training program. So he's been trained in how to react around handgun fire, what to do if something goes awry with your gun or something goes awry with a gun around you. So David is in this scene outside of Berklee College of Music on the streets of Boston when a gang-related incident happened, and he was out of this whole group that were kind of deer in the headlights, frozen stiff. He was the one who said, okay, here's the action. Got everybody moving, got everybody down, got authorities, found people, literally was part of apprehending the situation and settling it out. Now, I cannot tell you that stirred me up a little bit. But at the end of that text, I had to say, I'm proud of you, David. I'm proud of you, David. He took a default action. He's been trained on what to do in that situation. And I am sure because of him, there are people alive in Boston that wouldn't have been. So as scary as that is for me, I love my son to my core. His default in that dramatic situation saved him, I hope, and saved lives. So while ours aren't quite that dramatic, they have the same impact, and that's what I mean by having a default. Having a default that you just go to. You don't think about it, you just go to. So here are four defaults you can choose from. In every situation, you can breathe. I've mentioned this often. Your breath is always with you. It's ever ready. It's ever ready, and it buys you some time. It buys you that 3, 4, 5 seconds when you can just think, I won't let this bother me. Or, up, I've been triggered. All right, what am I going to do? What are my choices? What are my options? So you can breathe. A breath buys you time, but it's also proven now physiologically that it's kind of like rebooting your computer. You reboot your computer and it goes, you know, it takes for flipping ever, right, to reboot that computer. Well, it's much quicker in our bodies, and it literally will reboot us. Just like we reboot that computer, sets the circuit straight. Always use that as one of your defaults. You can shout. You need to say things out loud. Why me? Why me, that poor me victim thing? Oh, why me? Why is this happening to me? Why am I the one that gets the flat tire? Why am I the one with the idiot board member? Why am I the one with the unreasonable boss? Why is it me? It takes all that and you turn it to what's next. And the sooner you go from why me to what's next, the sooner you're solving instead of being in your pity party. The sooner you're out of the drama and you're into the solution mode. The second you ask yourself what's next, what can I do to get out of this, you've shifted away from the drama. So anytime you're thinking or feeling why me, immediately shout out, what's next? What's next? Why me to what's next? The same thing works for folks who worry about things that might happen. So they're asking themselves, what if? What if my kid gets into drugs? What if? Go to what's now. And this time of year, my best example for you on that is, what if this donor doesn't make his gift that I'm counting on for my year-end totals? Talk about what's now. Where are they right now? You're going to have a meeting with them next week. That's what's happening now. That's what's now. So don't get all wound up into what if. Instead, say what now? How can I prepare for this meeting? What can I do to really show them the impact this gift is going to have? What can I do to really reassure them that we will honor their gift and it will be used as we've been talking about? Who else might I have call them yet this year end that can be a testimonial to how important their giving will be, or can share the gift they just made, or whose story can I share and have follow up with a note? So what now? What am I doing right now? Not what if this doesn't happen next week, but what now? So what if to what now is your third choice. Number four, say thanks for sharing. Those of you that have been in my programs know that when something like this comes along and I can feel this all starting, I take my fingers, I wiggle them on the top of my hair, I gather up all of that drama or panic or anger or whatever it is, I look at it in my hand, I fling it off and say, thanks for sharing. Happy to have that in my head, but it's gone. Someone says something particularly stupid to me, gather up that sentence, fling it off, thanks for sharing. You know, Marcy, you'd have think you'd have gotten at that a little bit sooner, you know? Thanks for sharing. Your judgment of my timeline is not important to me. Thanks for sharing. Boom, gone. Done. So thanks for sharing. Number five, declare it away. Say, something good's going to happen to me. Got that from Joyce Meyer, who is an amazing, amazing preacher and inspirational speaker. It's pretty hard to say something good's going to happen to me and stay in the state you're in. So break the state. Break the state that you're in. So far we have breathe, say why me, turn it to what's next. What if, turn it to what's now. Say thanks for sharing, gather it up, fling it off, declare it away. And number six, my good old-fashioned, I create my life. When I'm in a spot where I'm starting to feel out of control, I just put myself right back in control. I create my life. See how these words affect our thoughts. Thoughts create our feelings about the situation. Out of control, in control. The feelings create our belief. I have no control over this. I do have control over this. That belief spurs our action. I can take this step, these steps. I believe I can take these steps. Do you see how it's so important it is? And number seven, we become what we think about, so manage those thoughts. Now I want to talk a little bit about why this is important in terms of the legacy that you leave. I don't care if you're 19 on this call or 79. Each and every day you create your legacy. If tomorrow you were only a memory, how would people remember you? And why this legacy is important is because how you think about drama and how you dial it down empowers you to stick with this honorable and noble profession, our fundraising work, and change the world. So when we keep that drama down, when we're committed to having a legacy of low drama, our dollars go up. Why is that? Well, I just thought of a few things for you. Because when our drama is down, we don't have need to judge others. If they say yes, if they say no, if they say maybe, if they have a question, No drama around that. No judgment. No judgment. Oh, you're bad. You said no. Where is your philanthropy? And when we have no judgment on givers' decisions, we open ourselves up to a healthier relationship with them. And oftentimes, we get to yes. It just takes a little bit different direction. When we keep our drama down in our major giving work, we have more time for our major giving work because we're not wrapped into, oh, I don't believe Betsy put that perfume on. I can smell it over the partition. I mean, we haven't lost all of that time for all that stupid stuff. And so we have more time to actually do our major giving work. One of the biggest complaints I get about not getting enough major gifts is, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have enough time. Well, save all the time you spend in drama, and you'll have plenty of time. We have a clearer vision in our donor relationships. When we're not all about, do they like me? Do they like our cause? When we're not all wrapped up in those kind of dramatic things, and we really look at, what are they saying to me? What am I seeing in them? Where do I believe they're at? When we have a more level vision, it becomes clearer in our donor relationships, and we more quickly can identify where their interests are because we're asking questions not coming from a place of, oh, my God, I got to get this gift. Got to get this gift. What question can I ask that'll? How can I get this gift? When we come, in fact, from a place that's, I genuinely want to understand how you'd like to make this gift. That clearer vision leads us to success. We have less delays in setting up appointments. When we dial down the drama, we have more success in this profession because we're not sitting there by the phone saying, I know they don't want to see me. You know, all of that stuff that goes around first appointments. This one will be a little hard for some of you, but I believe and I have experienced that when I put out to the universe or God, wherever you want to go with this, that I want to bring more dollars to my cause. I want to attract more dollars to my cause. I can attract these things in my life by saying, I see myself having success. I know that there are donors out there who can't wait to say yes to me. By having this whole story going on in my head, I can pull the power of attraction and attract those dollars to me. And, you know, some people think that's kind of woo-hoo, but I would rather be excited about something that might be seen to others as a little silly and really, really successful than stick to some of these old feelings about it or embarrassment about it and not be successful. You know, when we dial down the drama, our dollars go up because we have less wealth resentment. We don't resent people around us when instead of looking at that wealth as being unreachable or something that would never happen to me, instead we've got a real healthy, non-dramatic look at people have different amounts of resources. People have different amounts of wealth. This is where I see myself being. This is where they are now. I thank that person for their wealth. I thank that person for being a role model of how to live a wealthy, successful life that's filled with generosity. That's why they're talking to me about giving to my cause. Yes? True or true? So I have less wealth resentment. I have more positive giving intentions. I can really, when I dial that drama down, really, and I kind of alluded to this before, really find a positive place and buy into the fact that what it's all about for me is that donor figuring out what they want to do as it relates to my organization. I have more genuine gratitude for donors. When I dial down that drama, being thankful and saying thanks isn't just something I'm ticking off a list. It again goes back to a genuine, I'm really grateful for what you're doing here, where I sit with it for a while, where I let it settle in with me. I have better volunteer partnerships. When I dial down the drama, I'm not all about, what are they going to say on my call? Oh, my goodness, what if they say something really stupid? What if they don't say the right thing? I'm not all wrapped up into that drama. So I can take others with me on a call and have a pretty good experience. And you know what? If they say something totally wacky, I'll deal with it because I have faith in myself that I can. I have better staff relationships, kind of for the same things, because I believe in my staff. I believe that my staff are doing good jobs, and I believe that they're out doing good work. I'm not trying to trip them up. Instead, I'm coming from a place that says, you're doing a good job. When I can dial the drama down at work, I have more joy at home because I don't come home exhausted, frustrated, and ready to blow into the first person that I see. And I have more sincere donor love. That kind of goes back to the same statement as about gratitude. But I really, truly can appreciate my donors. Remember, attention is not appreciation. Remember that. But I can truly appreciate my donors. So number one in why your legacy is important and thinking about how your legacy is because when you think about your legacy and how you show up, you're empowered to stick with your fundraising work and really change the world. Number two, when you think about your legacy, every day you're aware of, much more aware of, your own actions and your own reactions, and you intentionally direct them to inspire yourself and others. You decide how to show up in the world. So when you think about creating your legacy, you're empowered to stick with fundraising because you dial that drama down, all the things I just mentioned. And number two, you have a heightened awareness of your own actions and the reactions that you cause with your actions and your reactions to other people's actions. And you can intentionally is the key word here, direct yourself to be inspirational for yourself and others. You decide how to show up. And finally, number three, let's go full focus now on the words we use. I want to start out by something I use in all my seminars, and I'm sure some of you have heard this before. You know, we have these words in our fundraising profession. Suspect, prospect, moves management, ask, solicitation, cultivation, qualify, there we go, qualify. So just think about meeting a prospective new donor and you say, hello, John, thank you so much for meeting with me today. You see, you're a suspect for my organization. And today I'm here to qualify you. And if you pass all of my questions, then you'll be a prospect for us. And I'm going to move you along our strategy until I pitch you and close you. Oh, my goodness. Now, you might say, Marcy, good night. I would never say that to my donor. I would never say that to their face. Oh, I see. So tell me, friends, who wants a friend that speaks differently behind their back than they do to their face? Who wants a friend that speaks differently behind their back than they do to their face? Maya Angelou said, you know how I love that woman. I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So how do our words make people feel? Because that's what they'll remember. The words we use, practice kindness. I used to be so impatient with what I felt was beating around the bush. We have a problem here. Let's talk about the problem. We shouldn't have to have a half an hour meeting to say, look, your perfume is stinking up the whole office suite here. You can't put so much of it on. Why do I have to spend 35 minutes having a conversation around this perfume business? And I would be like, why are people so fragile that you can't just say directly to them, here's the problem, what are we going to do about it? But I realized that it's not so much the issue, but how we frame that issue, the words we use as we talk about somebody, you know, gee, Beth, that is an incredible perfume you have on it. It really does smell wonderful. But I need you to consider that in our open office environment, it's kind of wafting over the boundaries here. And for some other people, they've got some allergies and some stuff going on that's not working so good. Could we talk about how we might have you wear your perfume differently? I'm sorry, because I know you enjoy it, and you do smell great. But can we talk about this? A completely different conversation, and stop wearing that perfume. So to me, that's how we practice kindness. And consider these things that we do say. What were you thinking? What were you thinking? Oh, my goodness gracious. How could you be so stupid? How could you do that? These are the kinds of things that come out of our mouth, or they're even in our thoughts. And let me tell you, in our thoughts, they do almost as much damage, because the person we may not have said them to feels it from us. These impact your colleagues and your family far beyond the offense that triggered them. These are the kinds of things that mess your kids up. Really watch those words. Really watch that. And look at where you're coming from. It's a place of judgment. So consider your words when you are feeling judgmental. And that comes from a place of you don't need to be right. Okay? Another part of this legacy is create this habit of meditating 5 minutes a day, writing down 3 good things that happened, your gratitude, do 1 act of kindness you don't tell anybody you did. So as you create that legacy, do you want to create a legacy that includes being in that quiet place for 5 minutes a day where you just are, writing down 3 good things that happened? Writing it down is the important part. Doing an act of kindness you don't tell anybody about. Oh, you know, I held the door open for Gladys when I came in. If you need to tell somebody about it, it's not the same. You just need to be quiet about it. And I want to add this. Just this morning I talked to my friend Sherry in Canada, and she's been taking care of an elderly friend of hers that finds herself late in life with virtually no family and no support system. And she's driven this woman to the hospital, 3 hours away, mind you. She's stayed by her side, and she's helped her get set up again in her home. And it's been exhausting. But she said to me, there's a peacefulness that comes with serving, Marcy. There's a peacefulness that comes with serving. It can be exhausting, but it's rewarding and brings you peace. So what is your legacy? What is your legacy? Just last week, I attended the funeral of a gentleman named Phil Goyke. Phil was 88 years old and still actively danced to my band. I mean, he was in primo condition. He and his younger partner danced and danced and danced and danced and danced everywhere we were at. He died of undiagnosed cancer a short 7 days after he went to the doctor not feeling well, and happened to be on my birthday. 7 days later, he was gone. And it was probably diagnosed because he was such a positive force. Even at his age, listen to this now, even at his age, there were more than 350 people at his funeral. 350 people at his funeral. All his friends are gone. You know, I mean, all his peers are gone, most of them. These were an array of people of all ages at this man's funeral. There was one theme. No one could remember him ever speaking a negative word about someone else, the words we use. If I messed up a song and I called it a cha-cha instead of a rumba, he would come up to me privately after the song and say, Marcy, honey, no, that last one wasn't a cha-cha, that was a rumba. Okay, always with a smile. Always with a kindness. He could light up a room. Sure, he had challenges and problems. His life was far from perfect, but he chose to live his life from a place of abundance and love, and he did this with his positive words. So what is your legacy? It's really that simple. How do you want to leave your presence in this world? Who are you really? Do you put out those snarky, angry posts? How do you make others feel, and how do you feel when you do that? Some folks say to me, I'm entitled to write what I want on my private Facebook page. I'm entitled. They don't go on my professional space. How do you want to leave your legacy? Taking sides in a conversation. Do you have to be right? Is it more important to be right than to be kind? How do you want to leave your legacy? Judging others' actions or feeling, internally or externally. Going crazy over something that someone tweeted in this political time. Really, going crazy. I've seen people just go nuts when they see some of these tweets. Is this how you want to spend your precious gift of time and expend your energy and talk about it and the legacy you want to leave? Is this the legacy you want to leave? Being clicky. Invite others in. See the times you're being clicky. Being a victim. Blaming, complaining, and justifying. When you want to create your life. Reacting to the drama of the day. What you say about it. You know, it's our politicians. They need to get those gun laws in place. Blaming someone else. Instead of saying, what can I do today that will lift the people up around me and have an impact on how they mentally are walking through their lives in this world so they never find themselves holed up in some hotel room blasting people? What am I going to do to lift people up today? And finally, being two-faced. You know, oh, bless your heart. Oh, bless your heart. Look at that dress. When I was at New Jersey, I got together with a fundraising colleague of mine, and he said, well, he had some pretty strong opinions. And he said, well, I would never say those things to a donor. And I say again, what kind of friend do we want to be? Somebody that talks differently to your face than behind your back? Who wants that friend? Who really are you then? And what is your legacy this December? What is your legacy as you launch into the new year? Why is this so important? Because that drama takes its toll on us physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And it's generally the toughest, come on now, it's the toughest on the people who are most important to us, our spouse, our children, our parents, our closest friends, our closest colleagues, our teams. People we think will put up with it. Have a game plan going forward that helps you shift away from the big things, the big dramatic things, Atlanta's closed 6 hours, to the little things. Really? You left that pen sitting here in my office? The little things, the big and the little things that get to you. Have a game plan. Have a new default. This holiday season and always. Whenever it feels like so much pressure is on you to deal with so much, choose a new default to those feelings. Notice and enjoy how you feel and the reactions of others when you do. Picture my dial and remember, you control it. You can dial it down. I'm going to send out an exercise with you that came from one of my coaches, Christine Kane, where you pick your word for the year. I want you to spend a few minutes doing this exercise. Pick your word for the year. It will set your intention. I am wildly optimistic about the success you are going to create this year end and in the future. May your holidays, my friends, be filled with everything that means the most to you. Thank you. Thank you for being such an important beacon of light in this world. Joy and peace to you and yours. Invest in joy. Create your legacy of joy. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker, and this has been our Artful Asking Success Club. Dial down the drama, dial up your success. Happy New Year. It's going to be a great one. My love, my thanks. Bye-bye now.